And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah! Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. I'm out in the middle of the desert, and I was talking with my good friend Charles Goyette. That's on. We'll introduce him in a second. And I'm just, we'll be back here in Arizona, when at the end of the summer, we'll get up in the mountains where it's cool and Jackalope Freedom Festival, and then looking around up there and land and so on, might get a little something for the summertime, but we'll be down in the desert. And we're looking now, and I'm we're getting ready. We got that food thing taken care of. We got like heirloom seeds ready. We have some technology, aquaponics and chickens and turkeys and goats that we've learned about over the years on our previous spread here. And we got a plan. Well, we're going around learning some more and seeing some other people's plans, and we're going, all right, well, I'll tell you one thing. Homie's got power, so we've gotten quality solar panels and all the equipment and everything. We've been learnifying ourselves on the bus, how everything works, and I got good friends that know about it. We're going, all right, it's this cheap, it's what? And I can buy what? Boom, done, here. So here's a check, give me. I'll put it in storage and just, I got it. Because I'm afraid that 6-7 months from now, it may be half the price of what I got it for. And hell, it's a quarter of what I was worried about having to pay anyway. So I'm like, nope, I just want it. It's like in the bank. I got electrons in the bank. But it could get a lot cheaper. Could get a lot more, too. But I'm looking for, like Gerald Celente, he said, what was it, gold, guns, and a getaway plan. So Charles Goyette, we want to see what he's thinking. Well, he just wrote another book, and he's a New York Times bestseller with The Dollar Meltdown and Red and Blue and Broke All Over, Restoring America's Free Economy. He's a former radio talk show host. That doesn't say enough. He's like an icon here in the Valley. He appears on many national television talk shows. He's contributed to LouRockwell.com, Daily Reckoning, Antiwar.com. He's written for the American Conservative, CNBC, WorldNet Daily, The Street. His new book, The Last Gold Rush Ever, 7 Reasons for the Runaway Gold Market and How You Can Profit from It. Now, this just came out. It's available on Amazon now. He lives in Scottsdale, Arizona here, and you can go check out all his goodies at Charles, C-H-A-R-L-E-S, Goyette. That's G-O-Y-E-T-T-E, Goyette, 2 T's, .com, and thedollarmeltdown.com, you got that. And then, of course, you can go check out Lou Rockwell. You'll, just search Charles Goyette, and it'll blow up all over the place. Now, The Last Gold Rush Ever makes a powerful case that the U.S. dollar and the global monetary system are headed for a world-changing crisis. Describes the ways it will unfold. Explains why owning gold is a vital means of protecting yourself, your family, and your wealth. All right, and Donna's got all the connections and to get in the book on Amazon and wherever, and his sites and such on the archive for today in the second hour. So let's say hello to Charles Goyette. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, Ernie, and I'm so glad to hear you're going to be settling back in Arizona because, when we need to get something done, when we need to push the Ernie button, we look around and you weren't here. So that's great news.
Yeah, there's a lot to be done. And I come back, and that's one reason why we spent the holidays here and we did some activism. We're doing a bunch of sign parties and so on. We're doing our third one, you know, this Saturday in Tempe. And it's just, it's taken to the street that's never more needed than now when they censor everybody. Even Ron Paul. I was going, whoa, yeah. Man, they really telling the tale there. Yeah, what'd you think of that?
Yeah, I guess Ron must have been busy inciting violence like he usually does, right? What a bunch of freaking morons.
Did they bite off more than they probably should have, you think? Or you know, they're not worried.
I don't know. They have the entire United States government behind them now, you know. They don't have the people, but they've got they've got the Pentagon and the executive branch and the legislative branch and the Federal Reserve, and they have all the implements of the state on their side. And but it's even bigger than that. I mean, we know that it's not just, you know, that it's really big tech and big corp in charge of America. So what do you think we're going to get? Yeah, I don't. Obviously, over the long run, they've bitten off more than they can chew, because it will all end very badly for them, but probably for all of us too.
So how you see? Well, 2020, we went in kind of going, yeah, this is the year, because in October of 19, when they were talking about, you know, increasing the balance sheet of the Fed, and they're taking everything, and now they got, I don't know, 40% of all mortgages. Everybody all in, it's ours now, thanks for playing. And that's what really triggered me. I go, all right, here we go. They're going to have to do a stimulus. They're going to have to print. The dollar is going to go in the toilet. There's no way that they're going to be able to raise interest rates or yada, 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 and it's over. Well, then they had an excuse. We got to print us some money. They did the COVID thing. Plus, it gave them the added benefit if we got the people to agree that we get to tell them what to do and wear this mask and you can't go here. And oh, by the way, middle America is shut down and we're going to close everybody's store and you got to get an Amazon drone delivery. So and it happened really fast. So I'm going, okay. I kept saying it won't happen all at once. You'll see, you know, the telltale on the breaking dawn horizon kind of thing, but it will happen overnight. It won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. Well, it happened. It was overnight. So now 21 is what? What are you predicting for 21?
Well, it won't happen all at once, but it'll happen overnight in 21. Look, I don't, you know, I sympathize with the people that have bid 2020 a fond farewell, expecting that 2021 is going to be better, but I'm not sure. In fact, I'm quite sure that it won't be. Look, consumer prices, I'm just getting ready to write about this for one of my clients, but consumer prices are starting to break out. And I'm surprised that there's a lot of prescience out there, more than I would have thought, because I keep running into people that are writing the clear truth about it, that there is a very thin line that divides, you know, 2 and 3% inflation from 10% inflation. And so the feds, you know, are going to get their wish. All the Fed governors, all the Fed regional banks, all the Fed officials with their nonsensical 2% a year inflation target, never justified by anything economically or intellectually, they're now talking, I mean, this is the camel's nose in the tent, they're talking about how, well, we wouldn't be unhappy with 3%, you know, maybe some of them are saying, well, 4% wouldn't be bad. But even guys like Bob Wenzel are talking today about, you know, they're going to get their wish, and prices are going to break out really big, and it's going to squeeze the American people. I don't know if I talked last time I was on your show about Stephen Roach, but the guy, you know, the guy's credentialed, and you don't have to be credentialed to impress me. You just need to speak the truth with logic behind you. Well, he has done that. And Roach's point is, look, the dollar lost almost 7%.
Wait, we're going into break. I don't want to miss his point. Roach's point.
All right.
That's where we leave it off.
All right.
We're going to come back with Charles Goyette and not miss the point. We need to know that he's got points to make. We're going to do that. Charles Goyette, the new book, The Last Gold Rush Ever. Well, we're going to be talking about that too. But first, we'll get to the point. We'll be right back.
From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Okay, you can hear me now, right?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Are you hearing the network?
Yeah, I hear the network fine.
No, right now?
No, not right now.
Okay, all right. Now, I got a new mixer board, and it's kicking my ass, you know.
Oh, well.
And everybody's always yelling at me, so whatever.
Oh, no, it's been fine for me, yeah.
Let's see, I want to do Telegram. Yeah, what are you using for communication on the internet? Anything? You got, like, channels and lists and crap?
No, but you know what I'm going to do? I have, this year is going to be so monumental for the collapse of the dollar that I still have the website, thedollarmeltdown.com, and I haven't touched it. I haven't updated it or put any content on there in 5 years. But I'm gonna revive that. In fact, I need a web designer. I'm not trying to bother you about it and push the Ernie button unless you just happen to think of somebody. But I need a web page designer for it, and I'm gonna start putting really heavy daily content on there, tracking and forecasting this thing, because it's gonna be this. In my view, this is gonna be the major issue for the American people. You know, grocery prices are gonna run out of control. It's just they've really cooked us up a friggin' mess. So I'm thinking about putting the Dollar Meltdown, not about the book, but just about what's going on, back online and making that one of my main activities.
Well, it depends on what kind of level I help. You want to just design it, or do you want them to manage it? What?
Yeah, I just want somebody to design it.
Well, I can get some kid to do that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Bob Anderson's son is working on Pirates, redoing the design on that. And while we were sitting there talking about it, he was sitting there doing it. And I'm going, okay, So, you're willing to pay a couple hundred bucks for, an 18-year-old. He got a scholarship to Embry-Riddle in Edward Snowden's surveillance security super-duper or something. I don't know. He's going to be an Edward Snowden. So I'm like, all right, well, that seems like you need to know how to do some IT stuff. Get over here and let's help. So if you want.
That's great. Yeah.
You can just design something and make you look cool.
Yeah, that'd probably be pretty good. Well, maybe you could just connect us by email or something.
No, I'll hook it up. Yeah, we'll get you started. All right, we're coming back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock
and Charles Goyette. We want to make sure that we didn't miss it. You talked about a guy named Roche had a plan of something. What was it? We were yakking about something else. Well, I promised him we'd come back.
What I'd like to say to your listeners is that nobody really paid much attention, but the dollar fell by the dollar index fell almost 7% last year in 2020. And Stephen Roach is, he's an incredible economist. He's got a, intellectual justification for what he's saying. He's not just making this stuff up. But he's running around with this, kind of an establishment guy, former chief economist at Morgan Stanley, but he's been running around with his hair on fire about the dollar's going to fall 35% by the end of this year.
Damn.
It is a, this is a cataclysmic event. You know, we had
35% against what?
Ernie, the housing bubble cost 10 million Americans their homes. 9 million people lost their jobs. A quarter of Americans' net worth vanished. You had $2 trillion in retirement assets that were lost in the housing bubble. This, a 35% collapse in the dollar, is a much, much more catastrophic event than just the busting of the housing bubble.
Yeah, but and he's not saying this. Let me ask you a question. You know, 35% against what? Against gold? Against purchasing power of... So what does that mean?
Well, usually when people talk about it, they're talking about the U.S. dollar index. When I just said the dollar fell like 6.8% last year, you've got to have something, you know, to compare it to. And so in that case, when you give a fixed percentage against one standard, it's the U.S. dollar index. But the dollar index is even misleading because it compares the dollar to a number of other currencies.
Right.
And all the currencies that it compares the dollar to are doing the same thing that the Fed is doing. They're all inflating. They're all losing value. So even when you compare the dollar to other currencies that are losing value, even compared to that, the dollar is down. So what I'm saying is, you know, you can, people say, oh, the dollar's up, the dollar's down. All of these fiat currencies are sinking. But, and you don't want to jump from one to the other. You don't want to jump from the Lusitania to the Bismarck to the Titanic, you know, but the dollar is sinking fastest. And as it continues to sink throughout this year, it'll show up in already this week we're starting to see. I think food prices are probably up 4%, 0.4% in the last month. You annualize that's 5% a year, you know, and that's just getting started. They can't have printed all this money. They can't have printed $3.1 or $3.2 trillion last year without it having an effect.
I went and bought all the copper. You know, when you're doing a big solar thing, you got to buy a bunch of wiring for whatever. And I said, nah, I don't think it's going to get a lot cheaper. I think raw material is going to go up. And well, you know, it's gone down, you know, still, but I don't care. I'm buying it now. Then it starts to go up. Well, then we went, to the lumber yard, and 2x4s that have been, you know, $2 for 20 years, you know, are now $8. You know, my son, you know, wanted to build a little ramp. You know, he's, you know, at home this weekend with the kids, and they built a little bike ramp for him, and we're going to get some wood and so on. You know, 2x3s, $5 when they're like, you know, $1 or something before. You know, you have a sheet of plywood that would be $8 to $12 is now $36. You're building a house?
Yeah.
Oh, the price just went way up. So to think that there's not inflation, of course there is. They won't talk about it, or they hide it, or food's last, or you just see the number on the pump out there, and if it's under $3 a gallon, you're figuring you're okay. Well, this is it's coming. It's coming hard, and it's going to be, you know, fast, just as it was in lumber prices on everything else. And now with China and the relationship with Biden, what's going to happen there? We buying everything from Walmart in China now, or what?
Yeah, I don't even know. And I'll frankly be pleased if the neocons that are lining up in the Biden administration don't get us into some kind of a war of proxies or principles over the South China Sea. So, you know, on the one hand, they could be seen to kiss up to the extent that it's an advantage to the major corporations that profit from it. But on the other hand, they've staffed the administration with all these warmongering morons. You know, they just added Victoria Nuland to the administration, you know. So they're fomenting wars already. They're lining, you know, it's as bad. And look, it's as bad as Trump adding John Bolton and Mike Pompeo to his lineup. You know, so you're going to have pressure for... you know, from the military-industrial complex for a lot of spending, and to have a lot of spending, you got to have a lot of confrontations.
So war? You see that coming? I mean, it's always has been. Trump's been the only president in my lifetime, I think, that we haven't gone declared bomb somebody for something. I mean, you know, even he's done more missiles than I'm happy with.
Yeah. No, I know. He bombed Syria needlessly on the basis of neocon lies. But, you know, and he never brought the troops home. He never ended the wars like he said he would. But, you know, and things have been so bad. We've had a succession of so many warmongering presidents and administrations in this country that if somebody doesn't move forward two steps and they just kind of remain in the same place or pull back the tiniest amount, you know, it feels like a victory to us.
Yeah, I'm not ready to. Well, he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize more than Obama did. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, they don't say it. The way this administration, whether you're a Trump fan or not, has been treated with a double standard in the press and what's happened, and then the venom they're releasing on him now. He must be ground in the history dirt with the spike heel of Pelosi kind of. Do you think this would be blowback on the government and their efforts to go after him now, or it's just all fluff and bluster?
I don't know, because you got you know, people that nominally supported him beating their feet for the tall grass looking for a place to hide right now like crazy. So, you know, it looks to me like the deep state is in deeper control than they have been in our lifetimes. It looks to me like, you know, I will tell you that the Capitol event last week looks more to me like a beginning than an ending. People right. think it signifies the end of the Trump administration. I think it, you know, I think we're going to continue to spiral into increasing chaos, and that you could look at that as a beginning of the chaos that we're beginning to enter. So, but I've never seen a time when the deep state has been in control. And as you started the show off, I think this is a great hallmark of where we are. When you started off the show, you mentioned that Facebook had banned Ron Paul. You know, this has reached a level of absurdity. They are on the offensive against any expression outside the deep state's worldview. They're on an offensive that they've never been able to sustain in the past, and yet they're getting away with it.
Getting away with it. More Charles Goyette when we come back in just a little bit. All right. Now I know which dial I got to turn. There's a meme on, you know, the Declare Your Independence Telegram somebody put up, and it says, if Twitter can do what they want, since they are a private company, then every single business in America should be open right now. That mindset.
Yeah, that's really good.
You know,
I like that.
Well, it's that mindset.
Yeah.
We were out here where Bob lives, about, I don't know, he's like 4 or 5 miles from Palo Verde nuke plant out here in the desert in Tonopah.
Uh-huh.
And the main crossroads that goes, it's called Salome Highway, that kind of goes east-west here in the Buckeye. And then, of course, you got I-10. And about, I don't know, 2 miles south of I-10 is where you got the main turnoff that goes into the power plant. And as you're driving the highway out here, you can see the condensation from the cooling towers. And you can see where it's at. Well, that one main intersection, there's, I don't know, he's Pakistani or Afghan, something. You know, he's Middle Eastern young guy in his 30s. He owns a nice restaurant there called The Tin Top. And it's a big, you know, it's kind of like a Rustler's Roost or the Frog thing up in Cave Creek, Carefree.
Right.
You have the outdoor scene.
Right.
It's kind of,
right.
you know, that kind of flavor. And it's a center of no town kind of thing. And he has a general store there with, you get your propane and everything behind that. And then you got, so he's like a going concern out here. Well, all of a sudden, when the COVID thing was hitting, doing the restaurant shutdowns in, I don't know, April, May or whatever, he's down for, you know, weeks, a month, you know, a couple of months. It was, you know, really hit him hard. So then he's back up, And they're doing really well, and they don't give a crap. You come in, you have a mask or don't. You know, they don't care. The employees wear them, but, you know, they're not, you know, goose-stepping to anything. And, you know, there's some Karen, you know, complaining or whatever. So the county comes in and shuts them down for a couple weeks. And it's, oh, well, you had somebody that tested positive. Well, you know, these tests don't mean crap, and it's just an excuse for them or something.
Yeah.
So you can see it actually happening, them putting people out of business. And it's, and they believe that, you know, if I don't comply, I don't have a choice. I signed the piece of paper. I totally agreed to some permit licensing of I'm not allowed. And so what do I do about it? And I'm, you know, you guys got to stop feeding the beast that's devouring you. So we're helping, going around talking to different businesses that are saying no and all that. So, you know, it's not like we don't get to have our say, or we see some people that are really resisting and they're not being part of it. But what do you do? You know, that kind of mindset, you know, they're going to come after you. They're going to use you as an example. They're going to squash you because that's what they want. It's like it's an intentional attack on entrepreneurs, middle America, the middle class, you know, self-ownership, and everything has to be Walmart and Amazon drone delivery. And it's intentional. And I'm wondering, to what end? Is it consolidation of power? Is it a takeover? Is this it? Is this how America goes away to China ruling over bringing in the troops? I mean,
You know why they're doing it, Ernie? As a friend of mine once said, because they can.
I know, man. They can. They're showing it. But to what end?
Yeah.
Right, here, we're coming back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
With Charles Goyette. You know, where did we leave off? We're going into the break, and you always had really good things. Right when the music starts, you know. Preparation is necessary. And your book, Gold Rush, the last gold rush ever, why do you say that? The last gold rush, what does that mean?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a little bit misleading. I don't want anybody to be misled by the title. This isn't about mining. It's not about prospecting. This is about the last gold rush in the U.S. dollar. I've lived through, you know, people lining up around the corner here in America to buy gold because the dollar was collapsing so quickly. I've seen them lined up around the corner of dealers to buy gold. It happened in Germany last year for different reasons, but it's happening in places. I think it happened probably in Turkey last year. But in any case, this is the last gold rush in the dollar as we know it. We've had gold rushes we had the gold rush in, let's say, 1979 into 1980. We had the gold rush that topped out in 2011, kind of re-topped out in 2012. And those were perfectly typical gold rushes when the dollar, or when the currency, it doesn't have to be just in America, but when the currency is made up out of nothing, when central banks print money, when governments run deficits that they can't pay, when they fleece the public, when the currency can't be trusted, and eventually we know that none of them can be trusted. So those are typical gold rushes, but this one is a little bit different because this one has other things going on at the same time. All of the other gold rushes in history have been caused by things like deficits and money printing, or the equivalent of money printing. And this time we have all of those things going on, but we have more. We have some other accelerants for this gold rush that have not been in place before. And so in this book, we're like arson investigators. And when the arson investigators come in, they don't look just at the fuel, you know, the wood frame of the house and the particle board or whatever it may be that fueled the fire. They look for the accelerants that somebody used to spread the blaze. And so we talk about, you know, the U.S. government debt. We talk about the deep state money manipulators. By that, I mean the Fed, and the damage that they have done to us, to this country, and to the U.S. dollar. We talk about all of that. But in addition to that, there are a whole lot of powerful accelerants that are all coming together in a really malevolent convergence all at one time. So the post-World War II New World Order is collapsing before our very eyes. That is a huge contributor, a huge accelerant to the last gold rush ever. One of the consequences of it, of course, is the de-dollarization of the global economy. One of the consequences of the de-dollarization is countries moving their own central bank reserves out of the dollar into gold. That's a powerful accelerant that wasn't in place in the prior gold rushes. So this one is bigger and more powerful than anything we have seen in our lifetimes, and we walk through all of these things that are coming together, and you will. And the book is actually kind of a deep dive. I mean, it's not just like, hey, here are six handy reasons, you know, that you should buy gold. You make a lot of money. This is a deep dive into all these things that are going on: the ending of the New World Order, America's new fascination with socialism, with banana republic economics, I don't know how many laboratory experiments the world needs in socialism before it will figure out that it doesn't work, but it doesn't matter because Americans are going down the socialist road clippity-clop faster than you can.
Those that bring it about, they know what happens, and it's what always happens. It consolidates
sure.
to the few. You know that you know the,
sure.
the party yeah. members they're fine. You know they come out way
of
ahead.
Of course,
we're seeing it happen right now.
But the college kids don't know. The college kids don't know.
Yeah,
you know, and they've been propagandized by teachers who were propagandized the generation before, who were propagandized by a generation before them, and it goes back 100 years or more.
So what do we see as the bell? You know, the chart, the evidence that. This doesn't work. We got to do so. Oh, yeah, let's try that freedom thing. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? I mean, what has to happen for that? Do we got to storm the ramparts? I mean, is it, we got to go be in charge of the marble? I mean, what?
Well, you know, sometimes freedom emerges out of the rubble. But, you know, I saw a thing. I have a correspondent that's been sending me stuff about, you know, the growth of authoritarian states throughout modern history in Europe and the Middle East and stuff and how they work and how they grow. And one of the things, I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like this. You know, at the beginning stages of the revolution, it's about like something like 8 out of 10 people think, well, a revolution is needed. And then a year or two down the road, 8 out of 10 people say, if only we could go back to where we were when the revolution started, because things generally end up worse. Americans are naive if they think that the conditions that happened in the American Revolution are normal. Mm-hmm. They are not normal. Things don't end up in a festival of freedom and liberty like they did in America. They don't end up with, you know, with autocrats. They don't end up with figures like the mighty General George Washington not wanting power. They don't end up with a guy serving as the supreme leader of the federal government for 2 terms and then saying, I'm getting out of here. Nobody should serve more. They don't end up with guys like Jefferson and Madison and Washington and Franklin. It doesn't happen. We are the exception rather than the rule. So, you know, it looks like our only hope for restoring freedom is really out of the rubble. And that's fine, because
yeah.
that's where we're headed. We're
well,
headed to
you know,
the
that
rubble.
Was our anticipation and the whole concept behind Freedom's Phoenix. From the you know, ashes of Lady Liberty's torch is freedom reborn. Freedom's Phoenix. That's what that means.
Yes, and somebody's got to keep the idea alive and nurture the embers and stuff while things get kind of dark. And so they need more people like you.
Well,
you know, we need more people to keep the flame alive.
Well, you know, that was, you know, as we've been pontificating about the future and raising our children and grandkids, and over the 30 years we've been doing this and so on, Donna and I, and then, of course, all our friends like you and a lot of other people, it's we sit around talking about what's better, you know, peace or freedom. Well, Mark Victor, he's leaning more towards, well, you need to have peace. Of course, you can't have peace without some freedom. And it goes back and forth. And his liveandletlive.org, you know, he's really pressing that. He's still working on the book. I read an early version, 70-something pages. He's like twice that now. but it's kind of a base concept of, let's give Mark some props here. What do we think he's doing? How's that going to come about?
Well, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I have the same faith in Mark that I have in you. You know, when I push the Ernie button, when I see Ernie go do something, you know, I know it's going to happen. When I watch Mark set off to do something, I suspect it's generally going to happen. So, I think it's great. And
yeah,
I tried to be helpful to him where I could. And, we need full spectrum dominance. We need a lot of people with a lot of different skills and some mildly variant outlooks about strategies and stuff, but that all share one common denominator, and that is that they believe in freedom. And we need a full spectrum, right now, a full spectrum defensive movement on every front.
Well, and one of those things is always
doing it. I'm happy for them.
Well, one of those things is always, you know, a political party or ballot stash or running candidates. And, you know, and I'm not against running. I do it all the time. I mean, you know, I just slap them around, make them say it. But, you know, to think that we're going to vote ourselves free, I don't know. You know, we'll talk about, you know, some more solutions when we come back with Charles Goyette. Charles Goyette, Goyette, .com. CharlesGoyette.com. We're getting a lot of understanding, a lot of education, a lot of history, and a lot of, you need to read his book, The Last Gold Rush Ever.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic?
Yeah, I want to help. See, Mark's style is, you know, you just sound crazy. You're crazy, Ernie. If you're doing, you're thinking you're crazy, you do what I want you to do. You know, I mean, that's how he approaches me. And he just can't see that we can incorporate and overlap and be a choice of. And there's a lot of people doing a lot of this kind of stuff. I talk to Gerald Celente. He's down the same path. A lot of people are. But I'm more the decentralized version of everything. Like you say, full spectrum dominance and all different avenues. It just has to be a movement, a flavor, an atmosphere, a fog, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can't be any one thing. It just makes you a target.
Yeah, many people have many different skills. And, you know, when I want to accomplish something, I need the help of people who have skills that I don't. I know what I can do, but I also know what I'm not very good at. And so I think we need a lot of people with a lot of skills working together. And that's, I think, and it's more vital now than ever, isn't it?
I do know people and trying to recruit younger and get more involved of, you know, different stuff. Robert, Bob's son can do something quick. That's all you need. And somebody that you know, can set it up and get it all SEO'd into the grid of your chain to whatever the hell. But, and that's another thing. Social media. Donna, turn the heater off. And your bacon. Once a sun hits that front window in the bus, man, it's woohoo!
Oh yeah.
That's another thing. When I build the house, it's so easy if you just pay attention to really have a lot less. There's so many techniques of having low energy use, and we got a new toilet, refrigerator, and washer and dryer for the bus, because it has, you know, a washer, dryer, and a refrigerator that it's older and it's not as efficient. So I'm finding and graphing out, all my energy goes that damn refrigerator. And I go, guess what?
Well, wait a minute. Have you already figured out that you're going to settle it out in that area, in the Tonopah area? Is that where it's going to be?
No, probably not. We've been looking. I found 277 freaking awesome giant sorrel by the thousands great acreage for $350,000. It is beautiful. It's perfect. It's Vulture Mine, like southwest of Wickenburg out there. It's 30 minutes from Walmart. I mean, you know, it's not that big a deal. The problem is the road. It's surrounded by BLM land. It's got, you know, like gold mines all around it. It's got two functioning windmills with 30-foot water. I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? I want that. 277 acres and beautiful valleys. And I'm going, oh, hell yeah. But who will build the road? Okay. So yes, the RV is not going back there. So it's a Jeep thing. And I'm going, all right. So BLM land goes up to it. Of course, I'll build the road on my own land. But it has a road that goes to it. And I'm going, all right. How am I able to work that? Can I bring in a bulldozer? You know, what permit system? What criteria do I got to have? You know, whose brother-in-law I got to make rich? I mean, you know, it's just, so we're going through that process. But that's where the problem is. You know, I'm so tired of, I got to get a permission slip from the man, you know, to live on my own property.
Who's going to know when you got 277 acres what you're doing in the middle of it?
No, I got to get to it on BLM land. All right, here, hold on.
LLN.FM.
Now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And Charles Goyette. You know, he sounds familiar. He's rejoining. You know, he did that as a favor to me. I said, oh, you got that pretty silky Charles Goyette voice, which everybody wants. You know, Mark Victor had him doing the videos for liveandletlive.org. Now, this is a lot of people are thinking this way, but what does that mean? You know, I'm a lot of it was just leave me aloneism. I'm going to go over here and, you know, be free and raise my kids and feed myself, and we're done. And then the guy shows up with his GPS coordinate of where's your grain silo. The big brother needs it. You know, it always comes down to that. You know, somebody from each according to their ability to each according to their need, and we got a boatload of people that needing, and you haven't, and it's redistributed. Do you see redistribution coming this year?
Oh, listen, we're in, beginning with COVID, beginning in March, you know, you and I and other people of our outlook that have talked about monetary policy and economics and stuff like that. We've always laughed at Keynesian economics. It is absurd on its face. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I'll tell you an anecdote. John Maynard Keynes is the father of the idea of deficit spending to balance the budget. And so we call it Keynesian economics when you're going to try to spend your way to prosperity. And Keynes, you know, was one tried to convince FDR that, you know, who needed no convincing, that the government should spend money that it didn't have. And politicians for two or three generations have jumped on board Keynesian economics, not because they understood the economics or the principles or anything, but because it allowed them to do what they wanted to do, which was to print money to buy reelection. So Keynesianism has been the reigning economic dogma of our times. And in my first book, when I actually quoted what Keynes said as an example of how Keynesianism works. And if we have 2 minutes, I'll tell you.
Go.
He said, the authorities ought to get a bunch of bottles and they ought to fill them with paper money. They ought to fill them with dollar bills or British pounds or wherever he's talking about. They fill them with it and then toss them deep in a mine shaft somewhere and then cover it up and then let the word slip out that there's money in bottles buried in that mine shaft. And he said, the consequent economic activity, you know, people rushing out to buy picks and shovels and so on, will create a burst of economic activity, you know, that will restore the economy. And, you know, it's so absurd because the money that they will spend on those picks and axes, you know, already existed in the first place. And it's going to be spent to uncover money that was printed, was made out of nothing. And instead of doing productive work to create real things, they're going to be just doing makeup work that the government made up. And I put that in my first book and my editor said, that must be a joke. You can't include that in there. He didn't really say that. And I said, yeah, he really did say that. Well, as absurd as Keynesian economics is, you know, that we'll spend our way to prosperity, it's gotten worse. And with the COVID-19 meltdown, we've moved into Elizabeth Warren and Alexander Ocasio-Cortez economics, we moved into modern monetary theory, which basically is the intellectual conclusion that the government can have anything it wants. It can spend money on anything it wants because it prints the money. And as long as taxes are collected in dollars, people will have to get dollars to pay their taxes. So the federal authorities, Washington, or they don't have to borrow money. They don't have to figure out how to get money from. They just print it without restraint. I mean, it makes Keynesianism look like, you know, a horse and buggy compared to the jet age.
Well, and you know, the Keynesians,
we have embarked on.
I remember their big thing was when economic times are good, you pay it back. But that never happened.
Yeah, they never did that, did they?
Yeah, I know, but that was their thing. Oh, no, you look at the math and you go, look, man, you can't keep doing, no, when things get, you know, stimulated, you get, you know, then you pay it back. And I've been waiting on them to do that my whole life, and it never happened. No.
They never did. We had the longest economic expansion in American history after the housing bubble when the recovery started. They never paid a penny of it back. The Fed printed money. Janet Yellen's going to be the new Treasury Secretary. Janet Yellen, in charge of the Fed, you know, was part of the continuum that printed in good times. At the late into a multi-year expansion, they were printing money and running deficits like never before. These people are insane. They're literally insane.
Well, now they're in complete charge. You think they're insane? Is it they're... Well, I don't think they care. I think they just lack empathy. I think it's just, yeah, we can do this because we can, and we're going to get away, and it's going to go to crap, and we don't care. I mean, do you think they don't know, or they just don't care?
Let me differ from you. There are a whole lot of people that come together with a lot of different outlooks. Yes, there are people that lack empathy. There are people that want to do it because they love power, and they will, you know, if they're given power, they'll do anything they want with it. But there are people that are stupid and don't know any better. There are people that do it because they can. There are people that are literally insane. I mean, these people pushing modern monetary theory are literally, in my view, they're literally insane. They literally are saying that anything the government wants, the government can afford because it prints the money. And they have no idea what the consequences of their actions are. And, you know, this is a sign of mental deficiency. And I have, like everybody else, I have people I know, neighbors or friends or family members that are liberals. And I go to them with it when they say, well, you know, the government should do this. These people need this. And I say, that may be true. Maybe these people do need this. Maybe you think the government should do this. But if you're going to be a grown-up, if you're going to be an adult, if you're going to be mature, if you're going to be intellectually honest, Every economic discussion, every balance sheet has two sides, assets and liabilities. So when you say that the government should do this and the government should do that and I need this money and they need that money and the people need to be bailed out here, you have to also say, if you're going to be an adult, you're not a child, it's not Santa Claus, if you're going to be an adult, you also have to say where the money comes from to do what you want. And the Keynesians pretended that they had that question. The political Keynesians, the guys in Congress, never did. But the intellectuals, the guys, you know, at Yale and Harvard and stuff that championed Keynesianism and wrote the textbooks that propagandized American students and stuff, they always pretended that they looked at both sides of the equation. The modern monetary theorists, I mean Elizabeth Warren, and I mean Joe Biden, I mean all of these people, they don't even have a pretense. They don't even pretend that there's another side of the balance sheet. Even Steve Mnuchin the other day, you know, Biden saying, you know, as soon as we get in office, we're going to turn it into a $2,000 per person stimulus. Even Steve Mnuchin, who negotiated half the awful deals that have affected the American economy, even he said, well, if Biden does that, it's going to cost $600 billion. I don't know where he's going to get the money. They don't care. Yeah. They don't care. We've moved into a new world of modern monetary theory. They don't care. And modern monetary theory is what drove Gideon Gano in Zimbabwe not so many years ago to print, you know, to print $100 trillion Zimbabwe dollars. And and we don't care. There's no other side of the balance sheet. Modern monetary theory is what, you know, guys with law degrees and PhDs that were the head of the Reichsbank in Germany in the 1920s drove them to destroy that economy with printed money.
It may
money.
Be the intent. I'm looking at this and I'm going, don't they know? And you're saying, no, they don't.
No.
No.
Some know. Well, some don't. Shoot. It's like the Iraq War. The people that came together for the Iraq War had a variety of different issues. There's some people that thought it would be good for the stock market, Lawrence Kudlow. There are some people that thought it would be good for President Bush's reelection, President Bush, Karl Rove, a lot of Republicans. There are some people that thought it would be good for Israel. There are some people that thought it would be good for the price of oil. There were people that came together with all kinds of different ideas. And that's what we're facing now. There are people that support that. There are some people that understand it's insane, but they're first in line to get the money, and they don't care. And there are other people that are clueless about economics, and they think if they want, they should get. And so they don't know. So it's all kinds of people coming together in this coalition to empower the deep state to do whatever it wants.
Well, they're going to know. And if they don't know, they need to understand. They're going to read Charles Goyette's book, The Last Gold Rush Ever. So at the bottom line is it that, you know, go buy some gold or some precious metals or something?
Better get out of the world is de-dollarizing. You better do it too.
De-dollar into, like, stuff. All right. At the end. Thank you, Charles. So how are you going to be?
Hey, Ernie.
You going to be okay this year? I mean, you guys got a beat on it?
Yeah, I guess we'll be okay. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, you know, whether I'm trying to figure out, they get so many things before me that I'm trying to pick and choose. And I, you know, I'm not sure that I know which course to take, but I've got three or four doors and, you know, I'm just trying to decide which one to take. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm.
And then I'm talking about, you know, maybe I should just move to Cornville or something, someplace where the temperatures are moderate and, you know, you have arable land, potable water. You're not on the main thoroughfare. You're not too close to the big city. So I'm thinking about that, too. So yeah, we're thinking about a lot of different
things. Yeah, that's a lot of, you know, just out of the woodwork, you know, a lot of old friends and activists and stuff. You know, they, you know, listen to the show or get a text from somebody, Ernie said kind of deal. And we start looking for land, and they're all over it. You know, this is, you know, they want to play. Oh, yeah, you're going to do with Frank and me, right?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Okay.
Does he come to your facility to do it, or
no,
is he there?
He zooms in. You know, that I, you know, try and get him on time one day. I said, I'm going to pull the bus up in the front yard, man. You freaking, and you'll still be late. Imperial March from Star Wars at the beginning of the show. Posted in hour 3, show notes also charged. Saying, okay, yeah, Charles is going to stay. And he wants me to do this. Yeah, pull it up on this one, and we can play it from here. Yeah, so I don't have to do it through this. Yeah, it's just, you know, man, I get one thing done, it's another thing. I got to take the bus in Monday, have the engine looked at. You know, it's leaking, and I just...
So is all your family, you know, everybody has jobs, and they're prospering, and... You know, everybody's healthy.
Yeah, they're doing well. Of course, you know who gets to be essential and not, you know, kind of crap. But the
that's why
whoever makes that the decision. But the let's see, Rhea and Tim is doing senior citizen financial planning package, Medicare, retirement, whatever the hell, and what he does. And annuities and different kind of stuff is what Tim Pachote, the Liberty Advisor guy, can't. So between the two of them, they are able to cover, you know, different needs with different licensing and so on. So they've been working together. And Tim's doing really well. He's top, you know, salesman of the planet for his corporation for the past forever. So he's fine. So Rhea gets to stay home and homeschool the two kids. And then Forrest is at Honeywell, as is his wife and father-in-law, and so he's, you know, essential, and they're doing well, and their son just had his third birthday. Then, it's third, right? And then, let's see, Corsair has his four kids. The oldest is 11, and they're super soccered up. They're all soccer mom and dad. And just went back to Ultra Clean Technology. It's a, they supply the build robots and whatever, the housing for the robots for Intel and the computer chip manufacturing industry of making stuff go where. And he had, like, I don't know, three buildings, and he was a site director with hundreds of employees, and he left that to go to another milling, you know, manufacturing aerospace thing. And then the other guys had been on his ass to come back, so he finally just went back after a couple of years, and they gave him, you know, super deal, and now he runs all of Arizona three factories, and he's only 32 or something. Yeah, but he's just genius kid. So he's Lord God King Bufu of all he surveys. And then Sierra works at Honeywell and has two little kids, and they're homeschooling. And Georgie used to work at Honeywell, but now he has his own. He did ITT. You know, he was always a mechanic and had all his goodies. So he's just making bank, you know, repairing cars, puts it on Google, Facebook, has right. gas. You know, George Amador Sanchez, so it's Gas Automotive, and he's been staying busy. So they're all doing well. They all have nice homes. They're all got their kids taken care of. They're not being vaccinated or homeschooled. I mean, it's kind of, you know, they're living the life, and they understand what's going on, and they're kind of in the same mindset, just, you know, hunker down, get good camping gear, have lots of guns, ammo, and silver and gold and crypto, and they're riding it out pretty good. So back a while ago, they spent some money. You know, some of them went crypto, and some of them got metals and all this kind of stuff, and now everything's shot up. All of a sudden, dad's not crazy anymore, you know? So...
Yeah,
but
hey, how about your crypto farming harvesting operation you used to have?
It costs too much in electricity, so I have a lot of them in storage. But a lot of them, like I gave the Bob here, he's running off his solar during the day or when he has a generator on, so he's making bank and using the exhaust to heat his house. He did the same thing
as
a place in Tingsboro in Massachusetts, and then Keith Cernick, you know, a friend and supporter. He takes four of his miners, uses it with his extra solar he has built up at the end of the year, and heats his house and just gives me the crypto. So, you know, they've really turned into house heaters for people that have alternative energy. You know, it just converts it instead of, you know, giving it back or getting almost nothing for it from the electrical company. They just, you know, make crypto. So I'm, especially when you need to heat anyway. So I'm going, all right, cool. You know, so we'll do that. We tried that, and that worked out. The math came out good. And that's one reason why I got so many panels. It's not that I think I'm going to be able to use all that for my home or shop or anything. It's so that I can do, you know, the crypto mining too. I go, well, hell.
Yeah.
You know, that helps pay for that, and I got lots of solar, so that's good. All right, here comes Frank. Frank. All right, can you hear us, Frank? Frank.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
All right.
Dr. Frank.
Yes.
I haven't talked to you in a long time.
Who's this?
Is it Charles? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm on. I'll just sit back and listen to you for another hour.
Don't you dare.
Well, that's great. So, I don't know what else there's to talk about. I mean, the Trump goes. I think it's just going to be boring. We're changing to the Biden report.
Okay.
This thing won't let me do the volume on it. All right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
It's Hancock.
All right.